Hello, everybody. This is Route 616, your home for all things Marvel main continuity. And this is episode 71. We all are back and with a happy new year to start. We're like, what, 13? We're 13 days into the new year and we finally got a new episode, so that's cool. So Bill's here and Redshirt Dan is also here. If he disappears on the podcast, no, he doesn't.
Want me to dig a grave over there? Okay. Why?
I mean, you already avoided a transporter accident, so you're ahead here.
That is true. It could have happened.
So, any fun pop culture stuff?
Well, let me see. Godzilla Minus One continues to dominate the box office.
Yeah, it's about to hit 100 million.
Because it's fucking awesome, that's why.
It really is, isn't it? I said it the last time. It's everything I've ever wanted a Godzilla movie to be.
Oh, same.
Right. It's just, they hit a home run in so many ways. Right? This was growing up when Godzilla became more of a children's character, you know, more for kids than adults. Because, I mean, the original Godzilla was just fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Originally, Godzilla was a metaphor for the nuke, so.
But this was just everything about it. Just
changing him up for a metaphor for survivor's guilt worked really well.
Well, this was a little piece of Japanese culture that's not been talked about for a long time outside of Japan.
Oh, yeah, this was super critical of Japan.
You know, it was...
This was exposing some of the problems in Japanese culture for the world to see.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very brave of them to use the plot line that they used. You know, yeah. I really, really, really did. And I think a lot of it talks about how the Cold War left certain countries completely... They basically got abandoned.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
of America was pretty pointed too.
Oh yeah. But I mean, like, countries like the Philippines, you know, and yeah,
we can't
there.
Make things look, we can't do too much to defend ourselves.
No.
Because we don't want to stir things up between America and Russia.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of what happened in Eastern, well, in Asia as a whole, between China, Korea, Vietnam, even Tibet. Places like that. Like, you know, once the war was over, these people were either left under colonial control or just completely abandoned to their own devices. You know, when the soldiers left, you know, and sitting there with destroyed cities, dead citizens, and what did they do?
Oh, yeah, the fact that movie covered like 5 years or something, and Tokyo was still a pile of rubble.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a nice exposure to, I think, for Western audiences to, you know, and I'm not trying to condone or condemn anything, right? I still, as much as I think Truman probably made the only decision he could make, right? I don't blame him for choosing to use, you know, the atomic bombs, but I think to walk away afterwards, you know, putting Japan under a governorship, you know, of a megalomaniac like MacArthur.
Yeah.
And just walking away. And, you know, when the Cold War started, that was all they cared about. You know, Japan was nothing more than a floating airbase to them at that point.
Yeah. I have pretty strong opinions about the use of the bomb, but this is probably not the appropriate venue for it.
No, it's probably not, but. I mean,
people are tuning in for a 25-minute political rant from me.
Probably not any more than they are me.
They get it in small doses as politics come up in the comics, but
yeah. But I think everything about this movie was what it needed to be.
It was one of those movies I walked out of and immediately wanted to go in and see the next screening of.
Yeah, it was a home run on so many levels, and to think that the special effects were, in my opinion, phenomenal. Because
I marked the fuck out when I realized they were using models.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the little train was very obviously actually a model.
Yes.
That was the moment when I realized that the water wasn't weird, wonky CGI. It looked strange because the proportions were wrong because it was all done with models.
Yep.
And that's when I started seriously marking out. And then Godzilla was on land and got to be a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
Instead of that weird CGI monstrosity they had at the start.
Oh, yeah. No, it was.
And at that point, I was just about cheering for the fact that it was done the way Godzilla is supposed to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It, for me, I came away from it thinking, you know, I'd watched Multiverse of Madness, Quadromania, Quadrophilia, whatever the fuck it was. Sorry. Little Who reference there for the rest of the world. I'd been so bombarded by visual CGI vomit in the most recent Marvel movies that it was really, really refreshing to be able to sit back watching a movie where the story helped me suspend my disbelief instead of the visuals. Because I sat there going, I was so invested.
Yeah, it was half the movie before I realized they were practical effects. And that's something I look for in movies, but I was so invested that I didn't care.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Even when there are moments where it's pretty obvious it's a guy in a suit, but you don't give a shit. You're just sitting there going, oh my God, that's so awesome.
And it also, it made me happier because it's Godzilla. It's supposed to be a guy in a suit.
Guy in a rubber suit. That's
I don't want a CGI Godzilla. I don't care if it's another 100 years. I want a guy doing the little shuffle where I can't see my feet properly and I don't want to fall over.
Well, it also goes back to model building. You know, I grew up in an era where model building was a big thing. Every department store or dollar store, nickel and dime store.
Back in the 1920s?
25s. Ahead an entire row that was devoted to models, airplane models, ship models, all this stuff. And you could get those little miniature dioramas. So you build like little model tanks and soldiers and all that stuff. And you build these things. And that was part of what always fascinated me about Godzilla was how they built these little model cities for him to rampage through. And it was like, you know what? This is incredible. That they've done such an incredible job of this. And so for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's, in my opinion, the best movie of the year.
So easily. It's hard to find.
Yeah.
Because it's only on a limited run.
Yes.
But it is worth watching. Oh,
God, if you get a chance. Although, I agree,
it's the best movie of the year.
Yeah. Oppenheimer was a fantastic film and a bit of velvet glove treatment in it, but still a fantastic film. Barbie was not as bad as I thought it was going to be at all. It's a watchable film for anybody who wants to try it.
I actually think it's really good. I bought it.
Did you? Yeah.
I really liked it. It's just goofy fun.
It is.
But I really liked it.
Yeah. It's what it needs to be too. I think in a lot of ways. And I thought, Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling did a fantastic job.
Ryan Gosling was hilarious in that movie.
He was brilliant. But
I always like Ryan Gosling, whatever he's doing.
Yeah. But where I came away from Evil Dead Rise thinking, wow, they did a really great job. They hit a home run. They took the Evil Dead franchise and they breathed a huge amount of fresh life into it with Evil Dead Rise. Because I didn't think they were going to be able to. Where do you go with it? But they found a place to go with it and did an incredible job. But Godzilla just is leaps and bounds above anything I've seen come out of Hollywood last year.
And it's one of those movies, you don't have to be a fan of kaiju movies to like it. Because it's not a kaiju movie.
No.
It's a movie that has a kaiju in it.
Yeah. It's what the original Godzilla was.
Yeah. It's the same thing I say about The Wrestler from a few years back, because I had a lot of trouble getting people to go watch it, because they're like, I don't want to watch a stupid wrestling movie. And I'm like, it's not a wrestling movie. It's a movie about a wrestler.
Yeah, totally different thing. And to be fair, Mickey Rourke really deserved all the attention he got.
He should have got the Oscar for that, I think.
He should have at least been, one of the top.
Yeah. I don't think there was... I mean, there are years that movie shouldn't have gotten. He shouldn't have gotten it. 2008
was a hell of a movie year, to be fair.
But I think which one? The stuff he was up against was pretty weak.
Yeah. Yeah. But... Yeah, so anyway, on that level, again, anybody who hasn't seen Godzilla, if you get a chance, you won't regret it. It's just a phenomenal movie. And it's not just some guy in a rubber suit destroying lots of little city malls.
Yeah, he rampages for like 10 minutes in the entire movie.
Yeah, there's an actual story behind it, and it's really, really well done. It's really well thought out. Great acting, great directing, great everything. Kind of like Liverpool's manager. Great directing.
Now we're going too far.
No, we're not. No, we're not. We're not even close to going too far. How's Ninth Place feel,
Bill? I mean, I'm fairly certain Godzilla wouldn't just barely squeeze past Fulham.
Yeah, how's Ninth Place feel? Just curious.
You see, I've come to grips with the fact that I'm Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Dude, you're the Ant-Man of the Premier League.
No, come on. I'm not Everton. I didn't get all my points taken away for financial improprieties.
Okay. How about we middle ground it and say Love and Thunder then?
Oh, fuck you. That's worse.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's making me Burnley.
Oh, no, that's making you Wolves.
Right. So wait, you like Love and Thunder? Because Wolves are overperforming this year.
Yeah, but they're still not where they could be.
True,
like Everton. Everton lost their 10 points.
I guess that is kind of Love and Thunder.
Should have climbed up. They should be sitting around 16th, 15th right now. But they don't seem to be able to get out of there. They're still 1 point over, relegation.
Yeah.
They are barely holding on, which is gratifying to see. But and it is. It's very gratifying to see. But unlike your teams, we've only lost one game this year. So not mentioning anybody else like the Wolves or Man U.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready. I'm ready, Captain. What's my mission?
All right. Let me give you the true red shirt treatment.
Yes.
You couldn't beat us.
Don't need to beat you. We're in first place. We don't need to beat
you.
Anybody.
Drew us.
Yeah. So?
What a sad state the Premier League's in this year.
We didn't lose.
How bad are you to draw us?
We drew Luton. Okay. Are you saying you know better than Luton?
Yes.
That's an insult to Luton, by the way.
I know. I have to watch United matches this year, and they're painful.
Oh, come on. You've got Garnacho. You got Martial if you ever decide to play him.
To be fair, they've been painful.
I was just going to say, that guy about Garnacho, because I think I've seen him once this year.
Yeah, well, you're going to see a lot more of him.
Trust me.
Oh, boy, you're going to see a lot more. As for the Wolves, well, talk about overperforming so far. You beat City. We're the only ones you didn't beat.
No, they didn't beat us either.
No?
No. Because of the, they should have, because of that penalty that got called off.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
They should have drawn us, but they didn't because of a bad call.
Oh, that's right. That was one of your sparse wins that you managed to acquire.
Seems to happen a lot with Man U.
What? Wins that they shouldn't get? Yeah.
This season, yes. I'm not even going to try to defend that because we are terrible this year. I've struggled. Yeah. There's been like two matches that I haven't struggled to finish.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a massive football fan, and I have a hard time watching a full game.
with them right now, yeah, it's painful to watch because they start strong. There's been a couple of times when they were playing Copenhagen, they were up to nothing.
Yeah.
Right. And then just a really, really stupid move on Rashford's part. I think it was Rashford who got the red card.
Yeah, it was Rashford against Copenhagen.
Right. And it was a dumb move on his part. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, I know what happens. I don't consider it to be deliberate on his part. I really still
it was a mistake, but it was still dumb one.
It was a dumb one, and it was a red card. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
Right. He couldn't avoid getting red card, even though I don't think it was deliberate.
Right. Yeah.
It still happened. So, boom, he's gone. And then after having a 2-0 lead, looking really good, you just kind of pooped the bed.
And we've had a bunch of stuff that was not dumb mistakes that have cost us that way, too. Like Anthony getting kicked out of 2 games for grabbing people by the throat.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't need to happen. But again, some of it... And I was watching some detailed analysis of different managers' tactics when they get up a couple goals or when they're down a couple of goals. And I have to say, Ten Hag's tactics are a little questionable.
Oh, he's got terrible tactics.
Ooh, I think that's part of your problem.
It's right? Definitely part of our problem, but I don't want him sacked just because what the team needs the most right now is consistency for a while to get into a form. It doesn't have to be a good form. We just need to get something consistent coming out of that team.
What you need is to try and not get knocked into the bottom 10.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure you're going to be able to do that, man.
Neither am I.
Right. It's really not looking good.
No. Right. But honestly, a complete collapse, not to the point of relegation, but a terrible, terrible season is probably what we need.
Well, that's what we needed in Liverpool before we, everything started coming back together.
Yeah, we need something to shake the management out of their complacency so that they actually start trying to manage us.
Yeah, so Jim is not the answer. No matter what anybody says, he's really not the answer. But I mean, we've got Alexander Arnold's out for at least 3 weeks. Salah's in Africa for at least a month. Van Dijk's just coming back from being hurt.
Winter break comes at a good time for you.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, because probably only going to have like 2 Premier League matches over the time most of those people are out.
Yeah, we've got Nunes, Jota, McAllister's out. Gakpo was still in. I mean, we still got a solid front line, but it's a mid-table front line. Right.
You've got the depth to hang on for a couple of weeks on a light schedule, though.
Yeah, but
Your schedule is comparatively heavy, but you don't give a shit about half those games, so you can play kids.
No, we don't. We don't care about Arsenal and the EFL and the FA Cup. It'd be nice if we win them, but we don't really care that much.
Yeah, so you can play the kids in those ones.
Yeah, but it's the Man City game I'm worried about. We don't want to lose to them.
Yeah, City is a tough loss for you to take.
Oh, and we'll probably get beat because De Bruyne's back.
Yeah.
Right, and that's what
I think City probably takes you, honestly. Yeah. City is very strong right now.
Yeah, without Salah.
You guys are fragile, and they're very strong right now.
Yeah, our 2 best players are gone, and I just don't want to think about it. So.
Yeah. Whereas, us, half our starting lineup is gone, more than half, but it doesn't really matter because it's not like it was any good when they were there.
Dan thought about it for 2 seconds and needed to smoke.
Oh, I do. Hey, stop and think about this. This is not going to be pretty for us.
I'll be honest, though. I thought that Arsenal match you had last week wasn't going to be pretty for you.
Yeah, we won 2-0.
Yeah.
It wasn't
a flashy, exciting game, but you did what you had to do.
Yeah, we did. We did, but...
if you can beat Arsenal, you can beat City.
Yeah, but City's been playing without their 2 superstars.
True.
One of their superstars is back.
Yeah,
We're now playing without our 2 superstars.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. It's just, I don't think it's a sure thing that you lose that match. It's going to be a rough match, but I think you can do it.
Mm, I hope we can.
I'd say it's like 55-45 City right now.
Yeah, I'd be happy with a draw.
Honestly, that's the most likely outcome.
Yeah. Anyway, on a completely different note, Ryan, have you done anything interesting? Have you watched anything interesting that wasn't Disney?
Not really.
I know kind of wrestling you've been watching that's not interesting.
I watched the premiere of Iron Fist Season 2 last night, because that's where I am in the MCU watch order, so.
Why would you do that?
Because I'm watching everything.
Why would you do that? I did that for you.
Marvel's Echo came out. That's cool.
Echo actually looks really good.
It probably is, because, this was something I was going to talk about when you guys were talking about something earlier, but I like that Marvel's going back to actually... They're
trying
actually
to make good stuff.
That and like part of that is going back and getting almost a diversity thing now, where in terms of the storytelling, they're bringing the grounded hero, the street level heroes in. So you're gonna get some more grounded stories, hopefully.
They're realizing you can't just do the same story with a different costume every 3 months and keep having people come to them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because that's been the problem since Endgame. None of the heroes really feel unique. They just have generic hero movie. No stakes, really. Like, sure, the world's going to end if they don't win, but
yeah,
there's no long-term consequences. Nothing changes. Heroes like a big battle. There's a lot of CGI, and then status quo continues.
Bringing the Netflix Marvel magic into the mix is, I think, a good thing for the MCU at this point.
I hope they bring some of the writers along with it.
Hopefully. Well, the success they had with Jessica Jones should tell them a lot.
Jessica Jones, Daredevil, and Punisher were like their three biggest TV shows of all time.
Yeah,
and maybe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in there.
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was commendable for what it was.
The success those shows had, I mean, especially Jessica Jones on a pure, like, that's a female lid properly and all that, and it did really well, got 3 seasons. And Daredevil Born Again is looking really promising since they threw out what they had and said, we're restarting this and taking it seriously.
So. Yeah. Well, what I'm actually curious to watch, I haven't seen it yet, but I am curious, is I do want to watch Madam Web. I haven't heard anything good, but I still want to see it because I like the idea.
I like the idea that I saw a preview for a few weeks back when I went to the Marvels.
Yeah.
And it doesn't fill me with confidence.
No, but...
No Sony Spider-Man character movies fill me with confidence.
I liked the first Venom.
Yeah, I really liked the first Venom. I thought everything about it was good, silly fun.
My only complaint
is it started twice. They should have lopped off the whole first 10-15 minutes when he's a successful reporter and just started him from rock bottom.
Kind of like our podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. Good news for any hardcore Star Wars fans is that there's 6 movies in active development.
Yes, Daisy Ridley's back.
Yeah. Are they going to Marvel Star Wars now where they pump out so much shit that's generic and everyone hates it just because it's the same shit over and over again?
Well,
you mean what they did with the last 3 Star Wars movies? Yes.
They're trying to go with... It looks like they're trying to go with variety this time and not be so stuck in...
I hope they do that because... The issue with Marvel during the big glut we had in Phase 4 wasn't specifically the volume. It's that they were all the same movie and show, basically.
They all had
the same tone.
Right. I mean, how do you take Ant-Man, the original, like the first Ant-Man, which was a big success and it was really good, and just completely destroy it that quickly? You know, they just... Ant-Man and the Wasp was such a bad movie. Comparatively, it was just horrible. And it's
because
like,
they were just generically pumping them out. They no longer had people that were interested in the storyline. It was just, Ant-Man and the Wasp are popular. We'll put a movie with them out.
Yeah, but it was just a catalog of errors.
Yeah.
Right. And
well, they wanted to do the third movie of the finished trilogy or whatever, but it didn't really serve as that properly.
No,
because when the MCU was good, the movies actually had a different feel to them. Like Ant-Man was kind of a family comedy.
Captain America
2 was a spy thriller.
Okay, if you say so.
It was like one of those 80s Cold War spy thrillers.
Yeah, I could feel the Jean Le Carré in it.
I think they
dug Frederick Forsyth up to write it. Yeah.
I think it was Frederick Foswell, actually.
Oh, that's so much better. Yeah, no, I just think...
But they were hitting different genres, and they had different feels to them. Phase 4, everything felt the same. It was just like one flat layer of beige.
Well, they went from where when they did their origin films with Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, and at the risk of having you both flame me, I'm going to include Black Widow. Their origin.
I mean,
films,
Black Widow isn't really a Phase 4 film. The script was canon Phase 2.
Yeah, but they were written in a way that made you care about the character, not the superhero.
Yeah, and that's always been
the
Marvel's strength.
The outfit. And yet, in Phase 4, and this includes Ms. Marvel, they didn't bother to try.
No.
Anymore. They were just, it was cookie-cutter superhero characters as cookie-cutter superheroes. And none of it was worth watching.
The fact that they couldn't make Ms. Marvel stand out.
This is why we need more Porcupine.
Yeah, that was a layup. The comics established a very distinct character and family.
Yeah, and yet they fucked it up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you can't make that one work, it's because you're not trying.
but I mean, like, I understand why She-Hulk failed. Okay, there was a lot of, lob the ball in that direction and hope somebody's dumb enough to catch it. Right, and nobody was there to catch the ball, and they had nothing to work with, and they tried to hit you with a lot of nostalgia when they pulled out characters like Porcupine for the comic fiction autos.
For the real ones out there.
But I mean, that's what Phase 4 has been. It's just fan service.
Yeah, but then they did this whole Ally McBeal thing with it that made no sense, and you're sitting there watching a 5-minute scene of She-Hulk and somebody else twerking. And you're wondering, what is the point of this? Where does this fit into the script? Why are we watching this when you could turn around, watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Luke
twerking
Cage,
was so 2012.
Jessica Jones, Flash, Supergirl, all these other TV shows that succeeded.
Yeah.
And they had a blueprint and they didn't even look at it?
I think the problem with the biggest problem with She-Hulk was they didn't commit. They tried to do the legal comedy route, but still keep the formula of the MCU.
Yeah, but it was very obvious that none of them had a clue what illegal comedy was, because
I agree with you on that. But
there was no legal comedy in it.
That's what I'm trying to get at. Is they had this concept they wanted to go for,
yeah,
but they had to stick within the Marvel framework.
Yeah,
so they couldn't commit to the bit of doing a full legal comedy with She-Hulk trying to function as a lawyer, because that concept is inherently hilarious. You've got this giant green woman trying to do everyday stuff in a legal environment There is a ton of inherent comedy in that.
There is. We've seen it in Night Court. We've seen it in Ally McBeal. But with She-Hulk, what little bit of courtroom, you know, appearances they did have in the show were completely beyond any sensibilities because there was no actual legal, you know.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they didn't commit to the bit. They had the idea and they went into it
and dropped the ball.
Yeah, and then just fumbled the ball and didn't stick to anything.
Oh, it was so bad.
So it was like watching a Man U match, is what you're saying.
No, it wasn't that terrible. Come on. Jeez, Ryan.
Do you think we would have made it into the courtroom? We would have gotten halfway, and then McGuire would have accidentally headed it into our own courtroom.
Good point.
Yeah, McGuire would have come in and punched the judge in the face.
We should get moving to the comic
Bruno
soon.
Was writhing about on the floor in front of the bench.
Before we get moving into the comics, I want to go back to the Star Wars thing for a moment. I'm gonna talk about the six that are in development here so far, because I pulled up the thing that I saw earlier.
Oh, okay.
There's a Dave Filoni Star Wars movie, so that's like the Mandalorian and all that stuff. But this one has a picture of Ahsoka attached, but I don't know if that's what it's about.
They are making an Ahsoka show.
Yeah, the show just got renewed for season two, so I don't know if they're planning to make a movie with her or what it's going to end up being. But
there's been a lot of requests from people around the world for a new type of sleeping pill, so that could be why Ahsoka 2 is coming out.
Then there's Star Wars New Jedi Order, which is the Daisy Ridley one, which is rumored to be starting a trilogy, but we'll see about that. So that takes place after the new trilogy and where she's setting up a new Jedi Order, so that could
potential. It's been rumored since the prequel trilogy was announced that they had that planned.
Yeah. Then there's The Mandalorian and Grogu, so they're getting a movie now, which is, I'm guessing, a continuation off the show, but I haven't watched season three, so I don't know.
Probably just to cash in on the fact that everyone loves Grogu.
So they're pulling an MCU with that one. Yeah. And then there is...
Okay.
So this one is, to me, the most interesting one, because this is the most out of place one. There's one called Star Wars Dawn of the Jedi, which looks like it's even further back than the prequels, so it's a really old Republic type of deal, it looks like.
Okay.
An old Republic or a high Republic.
There's going to be a Skywalker and there's going to be a Palpatine featured prominently in those, because they can't get away from those families.
Yeah, there'll be so many callbacks, it'll be ridiculous.
So that should hypothetically be the oldest Star Wars movie.
Okay, so what you're saying is there's a new trilogy coming out, being led by Daisy Ridley, which may or may not be good depending on who writes it.
Yes, yeah, so there's that.
Yeah, because the issue with the sequel trilogy was not Daisy Ridley, it was the writing.
Yeah.
There's Dave Filoni nerdgasms. Dave Filoni nerdgasms. And then a very old Republic, High Republic movie that has potential. Hopefully they don't drop it. Then there's two more I haven't gotten to yet.
If they're willing to distance themselves from the Palpatine Skywalker stuff, but they're not.
True.
Because that's what led to the whole clusterfuck at the end of the sequel trilogy, is that the studio demanded there be a Skywalker in it.
Yes.
There's two more. The next one's going to get, I imagine, some boos here, considering recent events with this guy, but there's a Taika Waititi movie, Star Wars movie, coming.
Well,
I'm sure that'll be comedy
obviously
heavy.
They couldn't get Rian Johnson in to destroy things, so they pulled Taika in instead.
Okay, there's a stormtrooper attached in terms of the picture, but I don't know if it's supposed to be some like grounded comedy or what it is. And then the last one is a Sean Levy Star Wars movie, which has a picture of a TIE fighter attached, so I don't know.
Really not feeling anything here. I mean, I don't understand.
Poe Dameron, maybe, for the last one?
Oh, could be. Why would they make a Mandalorian film?
Because they like money, and people will go to Mandalorian stuff for Grogu.
That's kind of over. That's faded. You know, the latest season of Mandalorian was just so bad.
I haven't seen it yet.
There's a whole generation of soccer moms that love Grogu.
Yeah, it's true. But I think
I will be watching none of these because I've come to terms a while ago with the fact that I don't actually like Star Wars. So I need to stop just going to stuff. Anymore. It turns out I liked two Star Wars movies. I don't actually like Star Wars.
Well,
the one that I'm really intrigued in out of that bunch, I mean, the Daisy Ridley one's kind of intriguing, but the one I'm most intrigued in is that Dawn of the Jedi one, because that actually has potential if they treat it properly.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how they fuck it up, because I have no faith in it being good.
Yeah. Well, I expect the Mandalorian film will crash and burn hard, if they manage to figure out a way to get it on the screen.
There's a chance we don't even see some of these, really.
Yeah, the next trilogy will probably do okay if they stay true to the original playbook and the original concepts they have.
The Daisy Ridley one should be good if they have a concrete vision and stick to it. And keep the studio...
Don't pass it around to different directors.
From meddling in it, because that's what fucked up the trilogy. The last trilogy is that the studio's like, no, there needs to be a Skywalker. We need to tie it back to the Death Star.
Also, I did hear at one point, the rumor at one point for the Dave Filoni ones is there was talk he was also getting a trilogy, and that there was a chance that he was going to do Thrawn, but that's never been confirmed.
Right, he hasn't, I suppose he's finished destroying Marvel, so set him loose on Star Wars.
Yeah. I think the big takeaway from this is Disney doesn't learn from their mistakes.
No, they don't. And
they've toned back on the MCU stuff, and they're focusing on MCU, which looks like they're learning until you realize they're just doing it with a different franchise because they're hoping those fans haven't noticed.
Yeah.
To be fair, they did just say they were taking a break from Star Wars movies and that they were planning to come back strong when they came back.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like
they're really taking a break there.
Six movies in production. Yeah, but I mean, from the last big one to now, they've only done the shows. They haven't done any movies the last few years or however long.
They've been taking a break with what is it, 10 seasons of television they've put out in the last 3 years?
Yeah,
I didn't say it was a proper break. I'm just saying what they said. And I'm
ridiculing them for saying it because it's a clear lie.
Well, yeah,
it is. It's. When Marvel stepped away and started doing all these TV shows, it was to set up the next phase. Even though most of it was just tripe, they were still trying to set something up. With Star Wars, they weren't trying to set anything up. They were trying to fill in holes because basically Rogue One was successful simply because everybody wanted to see what had happened that started this whole thing.
And I think they took the wrong lesson from Rogue One.
Oh, they absolutely took the wrong lesson.
Because what they should have taken away from Rogue One was that people want different stuff from Star Wars. Yeah, people liked Rogue One because it was different from other Star Wars movies.
But it also added to the mythology.
It filled in a blank. It did, but the big reason people liked it wasn't the blank filling. It was that it was a different sort of Star Wars movie. It was very clearly Star Wars, but it was a different sort of movie.
Yeah, it was a good story.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I thought it was an excellent story. And...
I think it's the best non-original trilogy movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Hands down. But again, they didn't learn from their mistakes again. Right. And I'm hoping that after the critical lambasting that they got from both critics and the fan base for the last three Star Wars films, that this time they'll do it differently. You know, and stop, just stop fucking around and just give us something new.
Unfortunately, a certain portion of the fan base has inoculated them against that sort of criticism.
They have, right? It's all
because the assholes that yell so loud about Star Wars being led by a woman and a black man.
Who cares?
Yeah, but the problem is those guys are so loud that the studio hears them and then can ignore any valid criticism about the movies actually being bad.
That's the focal minority.
Because everyone gets lumped in with the assholes who are just mad about Daisy Ridley and a black man, who I don't actually remember. John Boyega.
Finn.
Yeah, John Boyega. And both of whom are extremely talented actors. Both deserve a great deal more credit than they got for what they did, because they were, in the words of Mel Brooks, they were working with cardboard. They were given a horrifyingly bad scripts, and yet they still managed to, you know, with horrible lines, you know, just, oh my God, everything about it was terrible. And they still managed to make something out of it as actors.
Yeah.
And, you know, they deserve a huge amount of credit for what they did. Whether it was, I mean, I hate to point it out to everybody, but guess what? Princess Leia was a woman too. Okay?
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I know.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's just the idiots ruin it, because they also allowed that then the studio can tune out valid criticism and just be like, oh, everyone's just mad because woman and black man. Not everyone's mad because the scripts basically were just a bunch of writers taking a shit on a plate and handing it to them.
You know what? And you know what? There have been... Diversity has always existed. You know, especially since the 70s, diversity has existed. And most people don't have a problem with, you know, a black actor or a female actor, as long as they're capable of acting. And they
it's just a case of the internet inflating a few voices.
Yeah, Felicity Jones picked up Rogue One and carried it on her shoulders for the whole film.
Yeah.
Love her or hate her, she did a phenomenal job.
Nobody but the critical drinker wasn't making videos then, so he didn't get good point.
Good point. He wasn't there to hate on her.
Because that's what it is. It's like 10, 12 people that have realized that hating on this stuff gets clicks on YouTube, and their voices get horribly inflated because of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because, you know, Felicity Jones being female would have given him all the meat he wanted to want.
Yeah, I mean, same thing happens with the MCU in the last phase. They were pumping out shitty movies, but these idiots were yelling about the diversity instead of the movies being bad. And so the studio could just ignore the critique because, oh, it's just a bunch of idiots who are mad about diversity.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, diversity's existed there for a long time.
Yeah.
And people don't want to acknowledge it. But
comics and
existed.
Sci-fi have always been progressive.
Yeah. Anybody who's a science fiction fan, who's, you know, like a genuine sci-fi fan, will sit back and tell you, you know what? I watched The Omega Man and I loved it. It was Carlton Heston's having a great deal of fun with, you know, the I Am Legend story. And, you know, guess what? There's a black girl in that.
Yeah. Okay, not anyone, because Orson Scott Card exists.
Well, we don't talk about Orson Scott Card in Blade Company, Bill.
Yeah.
We don't. Not in Blade Company. You want to talk
about
it? No,
I saw what they did to his work with a movie.
Yeah, well, I saw what they
did to
Roger.
Because the first two Ender books and the Bean series were actually good.
Yeah, they were, you know, but, I mean, we've watched Hollywood, you know, when Hollywood can destroy a story as phenomenal as Damnation Alley, right, one of the better novels to come out of the, you know, the 70s, and they just obliterated on the screen. They did the same with Heinlein's Starship Troopers. They just absolutely crapped all over it. Gave you this garbage movie, but
I'll be honest, I love the Star Wars Starship Troopers movies. They're not good.
Why
they are not good movies?
No, they're really not.
But they are hilarious.
Okay, they are funny, but they're not the story. They're not.
Oh no, I'm not claiming that they're a fair representation or good. I'm just saying I enjoy watching them because they're shit in the right way.
They are very silly films. But anyway,
especially the later ones that completely miss the satire on fascism and just go full fashion.
Right. But the thing is, and it's, I think the biggest lesson is Disney never figured it out. Long before this diversity thing really started to kick in, you know, with the onset of all these YouTubers, Disney had a black princess. Disney had lots of characters that were not white.
Yeah.
That were leading films, starting with Lilo and Stitch, for God's sakes.
Even earlier.
Yeah.
Aladdin.
Aladdin.
That's what I was going to say.
right? You know, the Frog Princess, you name it. It goes on and on and on and on. Diverse.
Yeah. Princess of the Frog.
Whatever.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, so I didn't actually realize Dan was wrong until you said the right title.
Yeah. But my point is that the diversity has existed for a while. And nobody cares about, you know, what color the actress or actor is, as long as they're talented and can carry the role. Because there are examples of acting being so good that nobody cares. They just enjoy the film because the acting is really good. The story is really well written. They don't care who plays the character.
Oh, and even now, 99% of viewers don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
People were not mad when Namor was made black because the Chuds missed that one, and so they didn't tell them to get mad about it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, they forgot to trigger them. You know, so you send them an email saying, oh, by the way. But anyway,
probably because no one watched that movie because it was terrible for other reasons.
Oh my God, it was so bad.
But still, the issue was not Namor being black.
The issue was it was stupid.
Yeah.
God, what a stupid movie. Right? But anyway, we probably should talk about comics before we all
dive
into age.
We've done basically a whole episode ranting about pop culture. We should probably actually get what we're here for.
That's what happens when we don't get our pop culture talk in a while.
Yeah, we haven't been able to sit and rant about a lot of this stuff for ages.
So,
we should maybe just lop the first 45 minutes of this off as a separate episode.
For this podcast, we'll do the next one in a minute.
I remember when this was a comics podcast. Anyways, let's get into it now. We're covering four Avengers this time, a Sergeant Fury and a Iron Man.
Oh, this is boring. Let's go back to the other stuff.
It probably will be more boring, but anyways. The Avengers number 19 will start us.
I am less animated about the stuff we read this week than what we've talked about.
Avengers number 19 is going to start us off this week, which is titled The Coming of the Swordsman. This one's written by Stan Lee.
Stan Lee really likes writing about his male characters coming.
Dick Ayers is the inker. Jack Kirby, Dick Ayers is the cover artist. Already submit on letters. June 1965 release date, 20-page story. Dan will take this. Bill will take this one. It's Bill's boy. and we'll move on.
Quickly.
You
quickly
got the wrong bald asshole, Ryan.
Yeah, and there's only two of us. It's not like it's hard to pick it out.
Yeah. All right. The Swordsman infiltrates the Avengers base and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver attack him. I see we're skipping a lot of context here. He then admits he was testing them and wants to apply for membership. Captain America intervenes, saying the Swordsman is a wanted man. He escapes, however. That's the Swordsman, not Captain America. Hawkeye explains that the Swordsman used to be his tutor when he was in circus. Meanwhile, in Nick Fury's office in Washington, D.C., Hydra agents find a letter from Captain America explaining how Captain America wanted to work for S.H.I.E.L.D. They discard it as trash. A mobster finds it and gives it to the Swordsman. A trap is laid for Captain America. He leaves the mansion thinking he's going to meet with Nick Fury. Hawkeye finds out about the plan and gathers the other Avengers to help him. Captain America battles the Swordsman and gets captured before the others can arrive to help. The Swordsman then holds him captive on a scaffolding, threatening to hurl Cap to his death if the other Avengers interfere.
Oh God, please do. Please
but Captain do. America jumps off the scaffolding so the Avengers don't have to surrender. And that's the end of the story.
Well, I liked it. It was nice and short. Nobody cares. Next. I give it a 3, and let's move on.
First off, the Swordsman is awesome. He is exactly the sort of shitty villain that I mark out for.
None shall pass.
And Ryan is distracted.
No, Ryan, I'm just waiting to get my answer in.
What do you give it?
The next part picks up for me. I didn't really love this first part. As much. I disagree with the average rating of the 3 stars. I gave this a 2. I didn't really care for this one.
What?
I actually also gave this one a 2. I love the Swordsman. The issue itself was not
You guys are just saying that to make me look stupid. You know that, right?
I mean, I know that that's
it's a nice cherry on top, but
yeah. Yeah, that's just a bonus. But yeah, this issue on its own had issues. The Swordsman was great.
The issue had issues?
A lot of stuff was kind of
pointless.
Kind of thrown together poorly or should have been in a different book. Like the letter to Nick Fury probably should have been in Captain America's solo title, but they stuck it in here just because they wanted to use it as bait for a trap. But like Captain America has been talking about sending that letter for months in his solo book.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt shoehorned in here that they actually had him sending the letter months after he's been saying he sent the letter, and then just because they needed it for a trap.
Yeah, it was a little bit all over the place this one.
A little bit?
And the starting fight between Wanda and Pietro and the Swordsman went on way too long.
Mm-hmm.
They have like 6 or 7 pages of that, and it felt contrived to stretch it out that long. This is probably a one-issue story that they stretched over 2 issues.
Well, I guess that got us more Swordsman, at least. Speaking of, Avengers number 20 coming up here. This one's titled Vengeance Desires. Stan Lee writing, Don Heck on art. Inks by Wally Wood. Jack Kirby and Wally Wood on the cover. Artie Simic on letters. July 1965 release date, 20-page story. And Bill will also take this.
Take it away, George.
So this issue already starts with a strike against it since the inks are by Wally Wood now. Anyway, after jumping from the scaffolding last issue, the Avengers have very little time to rescue Captain America. But with quick thinking, they manage it. The Swordsman is outraged and attacks them. During the battle, he mysteriously vanishes. When he awakens, the Swordsman is in the lair of the Mandarin, who allies himself with the Swordsman and gives him a more powerful sword.
Oh, dance
favorite. I like how they make it sound consensual.
It's Bill's boy and Dan's boy together.
Because the Mandarin was really just like, you're working with me now or I kill you.
Yeah. Do you like to be alive?
He then creates an image of Iron Man, which he sends to the Avengers, vouching for the Swordsman's membership. Deceived by the image, the Avengers accept him onto the team. Once in Avengers Mansion, he plants bombs to destroy them. Later, however, he has a change of heart and tries to remove the bombs, but is caught by Captain America, who believes he is attaching them. After a brief battle, the Swordsman escapes again. The Swordsman regrets having botched his chance to join such a team of noble heroes.
Noble heroes.
Yeah, that's kind of rich coming from a team containing Hawkeye and Quicksilver.
Didn't see that coming. Yeah.
I actually like this one. This one is a 3.
Yeah, this one did get a 3. It was a lot more focused than the last one.
You gave it a 3?
Yeah, unlike the last one. Guess you should have saved your criticism for a comment.
Trust me, people. They only gave the last one 2s because they said they would normally give it a 3 anyway. Otherwise, they would have said 3 like they always do.
My glasses are falling.
I am really tempted to not rate anything for the rest of this podcast a 3 now. Sorry, everything's getting 2s or 4s just to fuck with Dan. Screw the integrity of the rating system. I have pride.
No, you
wait,
don't.
I'm a Man U fan. No, I don't.
You have no pride. You're a Man U fan doing a fucking podcast about comic books on a Saturday night. Trust me. You have no dignity, no pride, no integrity.
It could be worse. I could be watching the match.
Instead of 3 eyes.
Actually, that's tomorrow.
That's true. That's tomorrow. You get to watch Bill, that tomorrow.
Bill's the antithesis of Kurt Angle.
You suck. You
wow.
suck.
Wow. He's just mean. Can we go on to the next one?
We sure can, pal.
Okay. Oh, I can feel the love. I feel it.
Moving on to Surge of Fury and his Howling Commandos, number 22. This one's settled. Right. Don't...
If they don't have a synopsis on the wiki site for this one, the CMRO does have a synopsis again.
The bitter taste of defeat.
Perfect.
I've got it. Come on.
Don't turn your back on Bull McGivney. This one's titled. Stanley writes, Ditko is on art. Inks by Carl Hubbell. This one's cover art is done by Dick Ayers as well. Letters by Artie Simic. July 1965 release date. 20-page story. And I will take this one away. Thank God there's a synopsis because I was already looking through.
No, I don't know who Carl Hubbell is either. I looked him up and it didn't help.
I was kind of just moving past it, to be honest. I didn't care enough to find out this time.
I wore the red shirt for a reason. This would be my escape plan.
Just pull the it's good thing I gave you the last comics myself. Of the day. Captain Sawyer once more interrupts a fight between Sergeant Fury and Sergeant McGivney to announce they both need to report briefing. From a short distance at an airstrip, Sergeant Lee observes the Howling Command. Oh yeah, there was a Stan. This is the one with the Stan Lee cameo. Then he
and
tells
Dick Ayers cameo.
Yeah, then he tells Corporal Ayers that someday he'll be writing stories about them and asks him if he'd draw them. Oh my God.
Raises his ires. Keep going.
In a briefing room, McGivney and the Mall and his ballers are charged with a mission to sabotage flak gun emplacements in Polotsky, Romania. Meanwhile, on a plane, Fury's Howlers also get briefed. Their mission is to destroy a speedy train loaded with more flak guns. The objective of both
Bucky
missions
better
is
be
to...
careful.
The objective of both missions is to clear the way for Allied bombers to destroy the Polotsky oil fields, striking a good blow at the Nazis. The word YouTube doesn't like. Once they arrive,
it's Ploesti is what you're trying to say.
Ploesti, I don't know. Ploesti.
Ploesti.
Ploesti. Ploesti. Just Once saying. They arrive, the Howlers come face to face with the Maulers, mistaking them for the enemy.
And they get mauled?
After Fury and McGivney send their own men to their missions, the sergeants join forces to hold back a few Nazi tanks and buy their commandos some time. But they both get cornered and captured. During their interrogation, a Nazi officer notes how his prisoners seem to have a fight of their own, so he tries to take advantage of the situation and has them battle each other. But the two sergeants were faking it and easily get the upper hand on the Nazis in the interrogation room. After getting away, they locate McGivney's Maulers and Fury lends them a hand. Then he leaves to join his own commandos who are set to destroy the flak train that is about to gun down the Allied bombers. After blowing up the train, they spot barrage balloons that carry explosives, threatening the bombers who would most likely fly right into them. Using the Nazis' own tank, the Howlers take down the balloons. As McGivney and his men come back from getting rid of the flak guns, Fury spots another squad and tells his rival to take his men and leave while he and his Howlers hold off the enemy. It turns out that the enemy squad is Baron Strucker and his Blitzers. Fury's men each battle the Nazi counterpart, and the enemy squad is easily neutralized. There's still two more paragraphs. Not too long after, the Howling Commandos are picked up by a damaged Liberator manned by Lee and Ayers. During a long flight, the airplane experiences major problems with the engines and needs to keep pressure on the rudder pedals to maintain the aircraft in the air. The Howlers take turns to massage the pilot's legs as kinky, and they manage to reach destination.
I feel like that was Dick taking a shot at Stan.
Despite all
being
the losses.
A dick.
Despite all the losses in planes and in soldiers, the mission is accomplished and the oil fields were destroyed. Back in England, Captain Sawyer gets a full report on the mission. When Fury notes that McGivney is not back with his men, he offers his captain to get them back, but Sawyer is confident the other commandos can handle themselves. As expected, Fury's rival soon arrives and they resume their usual feud. Ta-da!
Captain Sawyer keeps an eye on you. Spacey invades and gets by on you. Bill got it. Ryan's looking at me like, what?
I tried to talk over him to spare us, but...
Ryan still doesn't get it.
So I have very mixed feelings about this issue. On one hand,
tell us.
It's exactly what I want from a McGivney Fury team up. On the other hand, it's really uncomfortable for them to make a heroic commando mission out of a historically failed assault.
I was going to bring that up, so thank you. Historically tragic attempt to take out the oil fields.
Yes, because they did not succeed in real life.
No, they got slaughtered. Absolutely slaughtered in that attempt.
And this is only 20 years after that happened. People remember. It's not like they did it today.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like making the Iraq War into a heroic success.
I thought they'd already done that when Bush was, you know, president.
Yes, but more credibly.
Okay, yeah, credibility is an issue there. No, I agree with you, Bill, 100%. How they managed to take something, one of the more, I mean, this is up there with Dieppe and the Battle of Arnhem, Operation Market Garden. This is one of the Allies' more dramatic failures.
Yeah, they could have just not named the oil fields and saved all these problems.
Yeah, because they could have just said,
like, there's ever anything in the comic that makes you realize it's that mission.
Until they say it.
Yeah, so if they just kept quiet about where the oil fields were, and, oh, we're destroying random oil fields. They might be in North Africa. They might be in Eastern Europe. Who knows?
Yeah, they could have just said, you know, off in the Caucasus somewhere, there's an oil field that we're going to blow up.
Yeah.
And it could have been mirrored enough to be viable without actually being the, you know, the Ploesti mission.
Yeah, by naming the Ploesti mission, they made it really uncomfortable.
They did. And Ryan, again, still has no idea what we're talking about.
I liked it. But thank I also you. Didn't know the historical
thank
context.
You,
this is what happens when Rob Zombie doesn't direct history.
You know, if we were the Muppets, you'd be Scooter. You would. You'd be Scooter.
I give this one a 3.
I gave this one a 3, but if it wasn't Ploesti, it would have been a 4.
Okay. Yeah, so Scooter, I'll be Fozzie Bear. As for Bill,
I'm the cranky old gay couple.
Oh, you're
Statler.
Yeah.
And that's not me being edgy. They're canonically married.
There you go. You see, I technically probably would have made you the Swedish chef. But anyway. The chocolate mousse.
I was going to try to do a Swedish chef impersonation, but there was no way I could do it without sounding extremely racist. So I decided to not immortalize that on the internet.
Okay.
Dan has no sitz qualms.
Dan said fair. Hey, I've been sitting here for the last month taking shots at some of these wankers on YouTube, like Critical Drinker and the rest of them, and they're fucking whiny crap.
Dan's like, I'm old as fuck. Yeah. Everyone assumes I was racist anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, the fact that my daughter is, you know, She makes a pack of Skittles look boring, but anyway.
Yeah, you can't stare directly into your daughter's hair or you will go blind.
You will go blind. It's brilliant. I love it. I'm a very second of it. And I'm the one who encouraged it. That's the worst part.
Well, you have none. She had to do it with someone else's.
That's right. Well, she still wants to dye my beard pink, so
at some point I'm going to let her do it. Imagine now if Dan did have hair and he has a Moira hairstyle.
Oh, I could do that. The undershave and everything. Totally do that.
Oh, I would pay money to see that. That would be hilarious.
I would. Just to freak people out. Right, but no,
I would. That's what makes it so funny.
I promise if I ever get a chance to actually march with her in a pride parade, I'm going to dye my beard pink just for the parade. I'm going to do it.
Oh, I'd leave it in for a while just to get weird looks.
I get enough weird looks. Apparently, I say things that are slightly off
putting. Yes, but these ones are not based on your behavior.
No, but I mean, apparently, I say things that are slightly off putting.
What?
I know, right?
No way.
I know. I have no idea what.
You off kilter?
Hi, I'm a Liverpool fan.
The fuck did that come from?
You were saying I don't know what I say that's slightly off-putting.
No, that just makes me friends all over the world.
Yeah, because they're afraid you're going to stab them. They think you're from Liverpool.
Okay, well, yeah, I might stab them. They already know that.
There's multiple reasons. Right?
Every time they see me wearing a Liverpool jersey, people back away.
It's probably going to shiv.
But...
Right. And then like I can Man make U fun of you, I get mistaken for Mancunian when I'm wearing my hat.
Well, let's make Manchester great again.
Man U 2024.
Focus is not our strong suit tonight.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay, so you each give it a 3. I know. Audience, brace yourselves.
Yes, nobody we've already been coming. Over this. We know what your memory's like, Dan.
Nobody saw that coming.
And with that, With that, we move on to Tales of Suspense number 72A story. This one's titled Hurrah for the Conquering Hero. This story is not so much of a hurrah. Stan Lee writes this one, Don Heck on arts, inks by Mike Esposito, Jack Kirby on the cover, Artie Simic on letters, September 1965 release date, 12-page story, and I will take this one away, hopefully quickly.
Okay, please. I automatically have a fear response when I see an old white man in a red hat.
No, I'm white. It's a protest, not a riot.
I'm maybe sorry, if you weren't that looking at a comic with a swastika on the cover right now.
I'm sorry, Ryan. I'm really sorry.
We're not looting. We're getting the essentials.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. We got this. We got this.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Merrick.
That's Tales of Suspense number 72, if anyone wants to confirm my claims of swastikas.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I
so
can
I
get
stick it to
this.
The point, okay?
I don't Return think this summary is going to be very long.
YouTube thank is going to bury this episode.
Oh my god, I guess.
Return into America following his battle against the Titanium Man. Iron Man begins to worry over the fate of his bodyguard, Happy Hogan, who was critically injured in that battle and is recovering in hospital. Dan missed all of this last time.
So Titanium Man's what level? He's already beat Tin Man and Copper Man, you know, Aluminum Man and sort of thing. He's
a step ahead of Asbestos Man.
Okay. Take a deep breath there, Tony. Let's go.
Meanwhile, Countess Stephanie de la Spirosa.
Keep that hat on, Dan. YouTube might promote us.
We might make it right under the newest Fox video.
Red card.
Countess Stephanie de la Spirosa wants revenge on Tony Stark for being spurned and hires the Mad Thinker in order to... Oh, fuck. I forgot that's what this was. The Mad Thinker in
yeah,
order
this
to
is
do
the Mad
so.
Thinker one.
Yeah, that explains a lot. Additionally, Senator Harrington Byrd has asked Tony Stark to reveal the secrets of Iron Man's armor to the U.S. Senate for reasons of national security. Before answering this call, Stark is kidnapped by the Thinker's awesome android and taken to the Thinker's lair. There he learns who is behind his kidnapping, and the Thinker attempts to take the secrets of Stark's armor for himself. Managing to break away and change it to Iron Man, Tony manages to defeat the awesome android and the Mad Thinker and turn them over to the authorities. He then leaves the Countess to walk home by herself as punishment. That's not very chivalrous. Later, back at Stark Industries, back in his civilian guise, Tony is informed by Pepper that the hospital called to tell them something happened to Happy. The grammar was fucked there. But wouldn't divulge the information. Tony instead acts cold in order to further push Pepper away. And that one's over with. That issue kind of sucked.
That issue really sucked.
I gave it a 2.
So did I. The only good part was the Harrison Bird stuff.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that, I probably would have given it a 1, to be honest. I really wasn't into this issue.
Same here, because that through line for these issues is actually really interesting, but oh my god, this issue sucked.
The Mad Thinker fucking sucks. Oh my god.
That's the problem with not super intelligent people writing super intelligent villains. You can't write someone smarter than yourself.
Okay.
You see the same problem happen with Sherlock Holmes, where he'll occasionally make mistakes that someone as smart as Sherlock Holmes should not make.
Yeah.
Like fucking up the difference between deduction and induction.
Well, there's a reason Mycroft existed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when bringing in Moriarty to be his arch villain was brilliant. But bringing in his older brother, Mycroft, who figured it out like 1,000 times faster than he did, they kind of made him a little more mortal.
Yeah. But even so, like some of the mistakes he makes, Sherlock Holmes should not make. He knows the difference between induction and deduction.
He does, but
the only excuse I've seen is that the not as highly intelligent Dr. Watson is transcribing these stories from memory later, and so it's plausible that Watson fucked up the words.
It's possible. I mean, that's like saying Stan Lee fucked up a story. I mean, do you really think that's going to happen?
Does it involve how magnets work? Or women?
Or the fact that the Earth orbits the sun. Again, you have to remember that Holmes only stores information that he needs.
That is true.
The day-to-day minutiae of life and basic physics mean nothing to Holmes.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't pertain to what he does and who he is as a human being. He literally has no idea that the Earth revolves around the sun.
Yeah, actually a story where he admits that he doesn't give a shit about that.
Yeah, he gets very mad at Watson for pointing it out because it clouds his brain with information that he doesn't need. And he promptly files it under forget.
Yeah.
Right, and that was kind of the point behind Holmes. Was, social niceties are something he does understand and have, simply because it furthers the means of what he... Whoa, and we just lost power.
Oh, look, Dan finally died.
We get to his turn in the podcast, and he fucking... we might have just lost Dan for the podcast. We're stalling like the last episode when I disappeared on Bill.
Yeah, I came back from reading that comic and just gone. If he doesn't turn up in a minute, I'll just take the next comic. Because he might have lost power. There is a storm going on outside.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully that doesn't mess up his recording.
Hopefully not. If it does, I can always get him to pop back in later to fix it, probably. Oh, there he's gone.
Let's see if he pops back in a minute. Because he might be fixing his problem. If he doesn't show up, I'll take the next one. You can have the last one. And without Dan and me distracting each other with pop culture references that you don't get, we might actually finish this.
Maybe.
Or I get distracted and immediately start hitting wrestling references.
I'm just pulling up the last one in case I need it. There we go. Yep, Dan lost power.
All right, well, I'll go with 21 then.
Yeah, we might as well keep going. Avengers number 21. Sorry for the awkwardness in this recording there. Avengers 21, The Bitter Taste of Defeat, this one's title. Stan Lee writing, Don Heck on arts, Wally Wood on inks, Jack Kirby, Wally Wood on cover art, Artie Simic on letters. August 1965 release date, 20-page story, and Bill will now be taking this one.
Hi.
Oh, shit.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, you're back.
I guess we don't.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry. No worries. Howard just died.
I figured that might have happened when you froze.
Yeah. Yeah, we lost power. So, theoretically, I'm back.
We just went through the credits, so, I mean, we can, if you want to pick up Avengers 21, we can pass it back to you. We were going to take them over.
Yeah, no, I'll take it now while I'm here and it's working. But yeah, everything just died. Just boom. So, okay. Synopsis for The Bitter Taste of Defeat. Eric Josten, who worked as an agent for Baron Zemo before his death, returns to the machinery Zemo used to create Wonder Man. There he finds the Enchantress, who tells him she will use the machine to grant him super strength as well. He agrees and is given the name Power Man. The Enchantress then creates a number of illusions around the city that make the Avengers seem dangerous when they accidentally destroy property and endanger lives. Oh, they better hope Superman doesn't find out. He'll come after them. And they'll have to lay there on the ground screaming, "Martha! Martha!" And Captain America tries to subdue Power Man as he attacks men with important documents, only to find out that the men were imposters trying to steal them. Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and Scarlet Witch are also caught with similar traps. The Avengers believe themselves to be new nuisances and are ordered by the authorities to disband. Proper freaking thing. Make them stop. Get rid of them, stupid Avengers. They're never going to do anything right anyway. Next.
So, I actually like this two-parter better than the Swordsman two-parter, to be honest.
So it's going to get a three?
Yes, I gave this one a three. I actually like Eric Josten's character in this little two-parter.
Yeah, it's better than I expected it was going to be. That being said, I didn't realize that point yet. So at this point, it was a two.
Bill and I
yeah,
I guess Bill and I both gave the first Swordsman a two. So we didn't fully reverse.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, let's move on to the last comic of the day. Avengers number 22, The Road Back, this one's titled. Stan Lee writing, Don Heck art, Wallace Wood on inks, Wally Wood and Jack Kirby on the cover, Artie Simic on letters, September 1965 release date, 20-page story, and Dan will take us on the road back.
Okay, here we go. Brace yourselves. Are you ready? Because I'm going to do it. The road back. The Avengers try to find out who framed them and disband for the time being. The Scarlet Witch briefly considers becoming a lounge singer. Okay. But instead, she, Quicksilver, and Hawkeye are enticed to join the circus, which turns out to be the superpower criminals, the Circus of Crime, then called Masters of Menace. The Circus of Crime poses as a normal circus and then call the police, claiming that the three Avengers were trying to rob them. Again, they flee. Meanwhile, Captain America, posing as a publicity man, catches Power Man admitting to the frame-up on tape. He and the rest of the Avengers then battle Power Man and the Enchantress and win. They use the proof to get pardoned by the government. Afterwards, Captain America decides to leave the Avengers. Aw. Who cares?
Gave this one a three yet again.
Yeah, this issue managed the impossible.
Shock.
It managed to make me actually kind of like a story that involved both the Circus of Crime and a team breaking up and having to get real jobs.
you know what? It managed the impossible for me as well. I didn't think I could care less about Captain America, but it seems I can. Just saying.
I'm so glad you got power back.
Turns out it's a new year, but Dan hasn't changed.
Oh, why would I? Why would I? You guys miss me when I'm not here.
Of course, everything's so positive. It's distracting.
You're positive you miss me when I'm not here. I got it. Thank you. That's so sweet. I'm touched.
All right, like so let's touched. Find out what anyway. We have next before Dan loses power again.
Yeah, let's excite Dan with next week's lineup.
Do I get touched so, again?
We have more Avengers, pretty much. We have Avengers 23, 24, 25. Then we are going to get a Sergeant Fury issue again, but this time it's the first annual. Finally getting an annual. Amazing Spider-Man 29 is after that, so there's the treat for Dan. And then no. issue 30 as well of Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, God. Don't you dare give them to me. Don't do it.
I don't trust you with those.
Smart man.
Oh, shit. Well, that's next week's lineup.
For anybody desperate enough to tune back in. Yeah. If YouTube hasn't shut us down.
After this madness. shit. Well, we'll see if Dan's wearing the red hat again next week. And if you like this one, if you're watching on YouTube, please like, subscribe, comment, share if you like you. Also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course, Spotify.
Annunciation.
And
Dan is a cunt. We're getting demonetized this week anyway. Fuck yeah.
We get monetized at the beginning, so we're okay. We can say what we want. Maybe if we ever get monetized, we'll have to watch what we say. But if you're on Spotify, never. If you're on Spotify, please click the poll. Let us know why you like Mad Thinker so much. Also, leave comments and tell us.
Leave a poll as to why they keep giving 3 to everything.
For alternate terrible villains, we also have Dan and my shitty football clubs.
That's right. God damn it.
Oh my god. Anyways, we will see you all in the next episode, and peace out.
Bye. Have a good one, everyone.